Welcome back to the New Look Packs What She Said podcast. If you're watching on the YouTube platform, you can see that we are kind of rebranding a little bit back under the She Said TV umbrella. So excited to be here. I am one of your co-hosts, of course, Maggie Loney, joined as always by Perry Goldstein. And we're so excited to be back with She Said TV. It was a great 2 years at Odyssey. We had a great run with them, but feels good to be home. Feels right to be back with She Said TV. And you can find us now on the She Said TV website, which is really exciting. You can still find us on Spotify, everywhere you listened to the audio format of the podcast, and then of course on YouTube at Pax What She Said. So Perry, how are you?
We're back. I'm great. I couldn't believe that the time for us to switch over came so quickly. I realized this morning this is our first episode back with She Said TV. Feels good, man. Feels good. Thank you to Aaron and Corey for welcoming us back with open arms. I'm really excited to get into our topic for sure, and just all the things that we have planned coming up, because we're getting into the meat of the off season. And I know we say this every summer, but like the season's going to be here so quickly. I think Scott Hansen tweeted out, if you were an NFL Red Zone fan like myself, he's like, I'm back with you guys in like 13 Sundays or something like that. And like, that's not that many Sundays.
As two people that were just talking pre-show about how we pack as much as possible into every single weekend, 13 Sundays is anxiety inducing, but here we are.
Don't love that. But here we are.
Yeah, so today the Packers kicked off mandatory mini camp. It is June 11th. So that means all the players are in the building. And even though they were already all in the building, which is kind of foreign, we don't normally see that for the voluntary workouts, but mandatory mini camp, all the Packers will be back. All of those updates, of course, will be trickling in from guys like Andy Herman, Paul Bredel, Rob Dabofsky, everybody that's there on the ground at camp in the locker room. But what we thought we'd talk about today, kind of tying into mini camp, is Packers that we think are poised for a larger role in 2024. Could be a breakout, could be just, you know, a more, you know, even contributor, playing more snaps, making a bigger impact. A breakout would be great for all the guys we're going to talk about, but probably unrealistic. So guys that we think are going to make a larger impact on the roster in 2024. Perry, why don't you get started with your first pick?
Yes. So I'm looking at this list, and there's actually another guy that we don't even have on this list.
And it's a long list.
We're going to have to add. So I'm going to add him right now, and you're going to see it and you're going to laugh. But when I was thinking about going into training camp, like, what am I looking for? You know, obviously there's a bunch of new shiny toys and the rookies. We're all very excited about them because they sound like they've really acclimated quite nicely and they're going to have impacts. I was also thinking about all the guys in the 2023 rookie class that made huge impacts right away for this team and how important it's going to be for them to make that next jump. And then this episode kind of evolved into, well, outside of that 2023 class, there are also other guys from 2022 and beyond who also kind of need to make that next step. But like my thought process was, think about all of the rookies last season who made contributions right away. And if they can make that next step, this team is going to be poised to be even better than they were in 2023. And that's kind of where we think, and I think most of the league thinks, that they're headed. And the first player that came to mind, there's a few, and I would love to hear who everyone in the comments comment who you think like that guy is for you who comes to mind. But when I was thinking about it, like it was, for me, it was Carrington Valentine, and that shouldn't surprise anyone. we're all self-aware. It's fine. But I was thinking about it because obviously we know, you know, Eric Stokes is going to come back. We hope he looks like himself. We hope that he's great. But Carrington Valentine really like shut down the boundary, especially with Jair being in and out of the lineup. He was incredibly reliable last season and more than I think anyone ever thought that he would be as a seventh round pick and as a rookie. And coming into the season, everyone commenting on how much bigger he looks, how he put on so much strength that he just like bulked up, and that he thinks he's really, everyone thinks he's going to fit very nicely with his skill set. He's a very aggressive, more man coverage style corner in the Jeff Hafley defense. And I think for Carrington to take that next step in a defensive scheme that probably fits his skill sets really nicely and like build on that confidence that he clearly has. I think he's really in a really nice position. I think also last season, he was really thrown in there. And it was a sink or swim situation. It's like, we don't have anybody else. I mean, we do have Corey Ballantyne, but we really don't have anyone else. And this season, it's less pressure, right? They can use him when they need him, when they think he fits best. But it's not going to be, you know, it's you or it's a prayer out there on the boundary, which again, is going to put him in a position to succeed.
Yeah, I think immediately, you know, you kind of nailed it. He's one of the guys that comes to mind because as a seventh round pick, you're not entirely sure how much he's going to play. I take my victory laps for this on Pack-A-Day because I said that he could get called into duty early, barring injuries, just because, you know, that's what happens in the NFL, right? Your bottom of your depth chart suddenly becomes your starters. And we saw that happen in a number of spots for the Packers. Thankfully, he played really, really well and he looked really well. And I think when you have that kind of rookie season, when it is almost lower stakes, like he played in every game for the Packers, all 17 games, started 12, which is huge for a seventh round pick, and just played really well. I mean, 9 passes defense. He led the team in PBUs, which is, you know, really impressive when you think about the guys that he was playing with. So yeah, a lot to like there. And you know, even if he takes like a modest step forward, I don't think they need him to be like the second coming of Jair. That would be incredible. You would love that, obviously, as a Packer fan. But he not having to have such a huge role and just being able to do his thing really well, I think will go a long way for the defense. Someone else then on the defensive side of the ball that I think we both were in agreement right away. And this one, I think there is a little bit more pressure on. So I'm curious your thoughts. It's Lucas Van Ness. First round pick, you know, he came in and got to sit, and Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith are still going to play. They're still going to be your starters. But to make that kind of investment, you know, the Packers were good when they did it with Rashawn Gary and they let him kind of acclimate to the NFL. But I think LVN, there's going to be some high expectations for him coming into year two as an immediate disruptor, especially when you talk about the way that maybe he fits in the transition from a 3-4 to a 4-3. I think of all the edge rushers, he might have the best body type to be able to do that. So if you think about that, you know, he might have a leg up in that scenario where the power rush and some of those things, he might play really well as a DE if that's how Jeff Hafley wants to use him.
100%. When I think about LVN last season, even when he got to play with his hand in the dirt versus when he was standing up, he just looked so much more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And again, I think Jeff is the kind of defensive coordinator who's going to take a look at what his guys do best and try to put them in those positions versus try to fit that square peg into a round hole. But I agree with you 100%. I do think it's the opposite, actually, of Carrington Ballantyne. You said it perfectly, is that there is a little bit more pressure, and it's simply due to draft stock. I mean, the Packers took him in the first round. Now, to counter that a little bit, you know, he was always going to be a little bit more of a developmental project, not nearly as developmental as a Rashawn Gary, if you want to use that comparison, even though I think they're very different players. But he was always going to be, you know, rotational to start because they have their two main guys. I really just think LVN just needs more snaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's anything more than just get the kids some more playing time. And I think that you'll see some more stats. Like I maybe that's a lame take, but I think it's really as simple as that, because as the season started to progress, his rookie season, you started to see things slow down a little bit. You started to see him use some of his traits and his skills. And I think it's just because he was on the field a little bit more. I'm curious to see how Jeff uses them. Obviously, you don't really want to take Rashawn off the field. I don't know if they start to snap limit Preston from like an age perspective. You know, you just want to keep like his motor as healthy as possible. And he's at an age where maybe he just can't play 100% of the snaps, and he shouldn't be. So you supplement LVN. Like you said, if they want to use him more as like a defensive end, I don't know. But I think you just simply have to get the kid on the field, because otherwise, like, why'd you draft him if he's only going to play 30 to 40% of the snaps? That's silly. He's a first round pick and he's got all the qualities. You gotta let him play.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we saw, like, it was game one, right? Justin Fields, he brought him down, first sack of his career, like registered right in his first game. Like, you could see the athleticism and you could see the instincts. And it's like you said, as the season progressed, he was able to slow down and kind of put himself in a position to make more of those instead of just like happening to be in the right place at the right time. So, and you know, we'll see what happens with that room too. Maybe JJ Anagbari is able to start the season. We don't know yet what that looks like. And even if he is, the Packers, you know, might bump him down the depth chart, one, to protect him, and two, because they did invest so heavily in Lucas Van Ness. So we'll see about that one. But I think these next two players we can kind of almost talk about together because they're in a similar situation. Colby Wooden and Carl Brooks. Carl Brooks, I think, was like the bigger shock here from this duo, just because he was so impactful his rookie season and almost unexpectedly so. Just the immediate impact that he came in and made. Colby Wooden, you know, I think had maybe the tougher stretch because we knew from the beginning he was going to have to add weight and he was kind of a tweener and we didn't really know where they were going to play him and where he would fit. So I think both of those guys are, you know, worthy additions to this list, but possibly for different reasons. So what do you think about those two?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're two different categories to Carrington and LVN, right? Because both the players we just talked about, I think higher expectations going into the season, given, actually, maybe I shouldn't say that. I'll just go with it. It's fine. Higher expectations personally going into the season, given what we've seen and also what we think that they can do. And I think it's for the betterment of both Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden that the expectations should just a little bit lower. I think expectations should be really solid rotational pieces who are going to contribute in their respective categories. I think one is more of a defensive lineman and one is more of an edge rusher. But I think they can be disruptive. Mm-hmm. I think they can be super disruptive, but I don't expect, again, happy to be surprised and be wrong, I don't expect either of them to all of a sudden become starters, to start playing 100% of snaps, but very important pieces. They were important in their rookie seasons, which is, again, shocking coming from guys who were, you know, you don't really normally expect to even develop later round talent who are, again, supposed to just be depth pieces. So they're important. I'm excited to see Colby Wooden as more of that like jacked up version of himself, and see what he can do. I think Carl Brooks probably has a better shot of being someone just we talk about more often as, you know, call it like the stats guy, just like because they do the things that you talk about, the, you know, quarterback hits, the sacks, those kinds of things. But as far as like, I mean, this, we're talking about a breakout season. Like, that's not the expectation, but I just don't think it has to be for them to have a really successful second year with the Packers.
Yeah. And I mean, I think what success looks like varies for both of them. Carl Brooks played 34% of defensive snaps, and I think he probably maybe goes up to like 50%. And it'll depend, like we talk about with Jeff Hafley, and how true he stays to the 4-3 base. We talk about base being nickel now. So how many of those guys can you really have on the field at the same time? Because we still have a player we're going to talk about in just a second. You've got Kenny Clark. Then opposite right. him, of course, is like Devontae Wyatt, who we'll talk about. We expect him to have a really big jump. TJ Slayton kind of being your true nose in that situation. So I think you said it really well, where the impact that they make, maybe – and maybe it doesn't show up on the stat sheet at all, but if you can set the edge, if you can hold the line, if the Packers, you know, run defense improves, those are things that maybe, you know, you measure from like a holistic defensive look, but it'll be because of guys like Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden, you know, getting dirty and stuffing those plays before they're able to break free. So let's talk then about Devontae Wyatt, the player that you added to the list, the already long list, because it's worth a mention, right? You said we're not just going to talk about guys from the 2023 class, and we're not. Somebody from the first round in the 2022 class that is deserving of the conversation. What do you think about him going into his third season?
it's so funny that we made this list and forgot him because I think maybe it's just a foregone conclusion that he's going to do really well in the scheme. Like, I think that to me, in my mind, it's just when I think about this front, it's like, oh yeah, it's Kenny and Wyatt. You know, I think Devontae Wyatt, again, very similar to LVN, I just think he needs more snaps. Like, I just think he needs more playing time, and then he's going to pop off the page. Because when he played last season, you could see it. You could see the difference. You could see the playmaking ability. He didn't always finish out plays, right? Like, there were still some things that you want to see him clean up. But I think it just all comes with playing time, and it comes with, you know, maybe some better coaching. And I think the Packers are going to provide both of those to this player. Now, pressure-wise, pressure's on, right? Pun intended. For this player. But, you know, this is season three. First-round pick, you got to start seeing some results. But I do think he's, once again, and maybe we're a little high on the scheme now because I'm saying being put in a position to succeed a lot now. But I think this is, if he's not going to show us everything he has this season with the new change, then maybe, you know, he's not the first round pick that the Packers thought he was.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that you don't need every first round pick to like be a Pro Bowler, you know, like, and maybe that's a hot take in that you're investing such a high draft pick that you expect them to be that kind of perennial, like upper echelon in the league kind of player. But he, in a second season, 5.5 sacks. Kenny had 7.5. Kenny started all 17 games, and Wyatt started 5. You know, he played in all 17, but he only started 5. So 50% of defensive snaps. And I think that's kind of the sweet spot for defensive linemen. Kenny historically is playing like 70 to 80% of snaps, and he can have an impact. And I think you could see Wyatt get into that level. Guys like Aaron Donald do it, but they also get gassed. And maybe that's, you know, the argument for getting Wyatt on the field more is that once he hits this upper caliber of talent, then he's going to have the juice and the motor to be able to stay out there longer and go up against, you know, the better interior linemen in the NFL. So I do think that he has a big season coming. Just from not only expectations from fans, expectations from coaches, but probably for himself too, because, you know, he had kind of a slow start to his rookie season, didn't see the field nearly as much as he would want to, but then the dust kind of cleared, right? Dean Lowry, a lot of those guys, Jaren Reed left, got on the field a lot more in 2022 or in 2023, made the most of it. But now he's the guy. He's the guy in front of like the Carl Brooks and the Colby Woodens. So he's keeping them off the field. So now you have to see the return on investment to warrant benching some of the guys that, you know, had a really nice rookie season.
Yeah, exactly. And like the TJ Slaytons who come in every once in a while and make a really nice play, but you should be playing over them. I do think him and Kenny have like an interesting, like positive feedback loop associated with having both of them on the field at the same time in that, like, you know, we always talk about let's get Kenny help. Kenny always has the double teams, right? And Kenny still is able to make magic happen somehow. And he has for the 50 years that he's been playing in the NFL.
And he's still only 21. Who knew?
And he's still only 21. Oh God. I don't know if those jokes are ever going to get old. No, I've lost my train of thought. No. But I think the type of player that Kenny is and his ability to pull offensive linemen away will naturally obviously help Devontae Wyatt. But I think also as Devontae Wyatt develops into the kind of defensive tackle that we know that he can be, and I think he already can be, then he's also naturally going to help Kenny. And then it's, like I said, this positive feedback loop where each of them are going to be able to eat depending on the situation. So I think we're going to start to see some serious interior pressure from the both of them. As I mentioned before, I think for me, what I want to see from Devontae Wyatt this season is finishing out those plays. That's the one thing that he really struggled with last season. But the front, if each of these players really takes that step up, and I think genuinely just getting what we know we get out of the Kennys, the Rashans, the Prestons, they're going to be really dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think what the Packers have done in the last couple of draft classes is set themselves up really well from a depth perspective. And, you know, I know the 2023 season was kind of rocky in parts. We had a lot of questions, especially early before they kind of found their rhythm. But you think about, like, Kenny Clark has been relatively healthy for his entire career, thankfully, knock on wood, played all 17 games the last two seasons, played all 16 games before that. So a lot of what you're hoping for is, like, that all these guys get to be on the field at the same time. But I think what the Packers have also done is kind of set themselves up nicely in most of the rooms. I think you could argue the same for Edge. If, like, one of your guys goes down, there's a lot of confidence. And I think if, God forbids, you know, Kenny goes down, there's more confidence in Devontae Wyatt and Carl Brooks and TJ Slayton and Colby Wooden than there had been in, like, Tyler Lancaster and Dean Lowry. And I, like, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to those guys, but, like, we can see the way that the Packers are structuring their defense in the way that they're bringing in certain guys. So let's transition then to the last player we have on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And then we'll switch to offense. And it is obviously Devontae Wyatt's running mate, first round pick in 2022, Quay Walker, who I think is in a really interesting position here, having a brand new running mate opposite him to start the season. So what do you think about that one?
I wanted you to start with this one. Okay. Quay, not for some reason, I understand why. He's become this, like, very polarizing figure. Yes. I understand why. I also understand, like, when you are a first round pick, there is a lot of scrutiny. There's a lot of scrutiny in your game. There's a lot of scrutiny with everything that you do on and off the field. And Quay has attracted a lot of attention to himself. I like to think that every player going into a new defensive scheme gets a little bit of, like, wipe the slate clean for themselves. If the coaches get that, the players should get that too. I also think Quay has done his own, like, repentance, and we should accept that and move forward with him. As far as... One more thing on that. I think we also always forget that, like, these guys are kids. Like, think about all the dumb stuff you did when you were 21.
Absolutely nothing. I'm just kidding.
Of course not. You were an angel. Well, I did a lot of dumb stuff when I was 21, and it was never, you know, in front of a 80,000 person crowd.
Right. So, and a million people watching on TV.
Exactly. So I think as far as, like, taking accountability and moving forward, I think that holds a lot of weight and takes a lot of guts. So with that said, I think that this is going to be a really nice, like, turn the page for a Quay Walker, right? And you mentioned it. They obviously took Edge Cooper. And I feel similarly about this situation as I do for, like, a Devontae Wyatt and a Kenny Clark. It's different. These are very young players who still need to develop. But I think the idea of developing together is beneficial. And they're developing together under the same scheme, unlike other situations where you have to develop under two different schemes. And that can be really difficult for young players. I think Quay has all the tools. I'm still really high on him. I think he showed a lot of flashes. I think playing inside linebacker in this league right now is really difficult. Similarly to slot corner, right? Like, you sometimes have to line up against big tight ends. You sometimes have to go in and fill the gaps against really shifty little running backs like Aaron Jones. I mean, think about how many times we saw Aaron Jones lined up against a linebacker and we're like, oh, get him the
first
ball.
Game that's season.
Done. Yeah, yeah, that's done. That's gone. Right. So I think Quay has all the football IQ to do it. He wore the green dot last season. It seems like he's going to do it again this season. He needs to get better on his coverage abilities, sure. But not every player is going to be a Fred Warner, right? And a Dre Greenlaw. Those are exceptional, like, you know, out of the ballpark outliers. He's got all the speed, all the sideline to sideline. He's a thumper. He's all of it. I hope that he develops a nice relationship with this new defensive staff, because I think that he needs someone to like get it out of him. It wasn't it with the last crew. And he still played well, but of course there were still games where you're like, oh man, Quay was just out in no man's land there, or he was a little confused. Again, I also think a running mate, someone that he trusts, someone who can fill the holes, is going to be really good for him. Positive feedback loop. That's my new term. I don't know how you feel. I still feel like he has so much development to go, and I am confident he's going to get there.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think that like last season didn't really do them any favors, because Devondre Campbell played 11 games, Quay played 14 games, Isaiah McDuffie played 16 games, started 8. So there was always just this like, you know, who's going to be out there? There were a lot of injuries, and that's detrimental to any team when, especially at a position like inside linebacker, you know, you typically don't have like 4 quality starting inside linebackers on your roster the same way that you might have like 4 potential starting edge rushers or corners or safeties. Like inside linebacker, normally the depth there is like 4 special teams, you know, and yeah. Eric Wilson, I thought, played well when he was on the field, but and Isaiah McDuffie too. Like, I think he, you know, he's pretty much a roster lock with Jeff Hafley being there, but do I want him to start all 17 games? Probably not, you know, and I think that's why you have Quay and Cooper. So I think one of the things we talked about when Jeff Hafley was hired immediately was some of the 7-man pressures he brought and what that could do to like rejuvenate a guy like Quay Walker, who, like you said, has had his up and downs on the stat sheet. Yeah, I had over 100 tackles rookie season and sophomore season. So like there's things to build on. But like you said, there's also a lot of processing issues where you want him to get faster. And I think having a running mate, or even having like X, you know, kind of floating around, Xavier McKinney,
100%.
Those things are going to make his job so much easier, where he, I think, is going to be able to be proactive instead of having to be reactive. And a lot of that, again, a lot of pressure, I think, gets put on some of these guys if one area of the defense isn't performing. And I'm not trying to put blame anywhere, but like, if one of your linemen misses a tackle and all of a sudden it's up to Quay, who is pivoting left to try and pivot right. And, you know, like you see plays blown up like that all the time. So to have really instinctual, fast playmakers and to have running mates like Xavier McKinney and Cooper and
Von Bullard, maybe.
Yeah. Potentially Bullard, to have Jair healthy. Like, I think all of those things are going to make Quay a better football player, assuming that all these guys stay healthy, because I think that at the end of the day is the biggest thing. Like when we see a healthy Quay who's comfortable and confident and can kind of just downhill get to the ball, I don't know if I ever need him to like float around in coverage. Like, I think I would rather have Bullard and, you know, Oladapo and some of your like bigger safeties doing that, but just let Quay react. And I think he'll be okay.
I agree with you 100%. And I think also, like, again, we have this like gold standard now of inside linebacker, and we saw, you know, like what the Bucks had when they won the Super Bowl, and that's what everybody wants. And like, it's just not necessarily like what every team needs, because if that's what won Super Bowls, like that's what everyone would try to do. And also, I mean, they're not like a dime a dozen. I mean,
it hasn't helped the Niners win a Super Bowl.
So, but for real, like they're nearly impossible to find. And also like, it's not as if you can't exploit that as well. So I agree with you. I think just find what Quay does best, make him confident in doing that well. And I also think Cooper can fill in the holes. And if not, like you said, X can. Hopefully Javon Bullard can. Hopefully a really strong cornerback room can. You don't need to put everything on the shoulders of this young man, because I think also once you start to do that, that's kind of where he starts to crumble.
And it's happened to him already, you know.
Like... Exactly. And especially last season when he's kind of out there on an island by himself, pretty much handling the middle of the field, because let's be real, the safeties last season were not necessarily being the most helpful. yeah, sure. Of course, your play is going to suffer, as well as having to dictate communication, which also was not a strong suit of this defense last season. So I think if anyone is going to make that huge jump this season, just by way of like naturally due to the fact that this defense is just going to operate better, it's going to be Quay.
Yeah, I agree. But I think now we have to flip it to the offensive side of the ball because we've already spent 30 minutes. It's pretty normal for us, yeah, to talk about defense. But some of these guys, like we said, definitely not second-year players, but probably the one with the most to prove, the biggest weight on his shoulders, of course, is quarterback Jordan Love. Had a slow start to the season. We said a lot of that necessarily wasn't his fault. You're talking about a young offense trying to acclimate, get on the same page. You have injuries to your first and second wide receivers, and you know your core is depleted. You're wondering what your offensive line is going to look like, and then he just lit it the hell up for the second half of the season, led a playoff push, and probably going to get a contract in the next month or so before the season starts. So what's your thoughts on QB1?
How long do you think people would have put money on before we started talking about Jordan Love? Because I bet it wasn't 31 minutes and 5 seconds.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I mean, not to state the obvious, but second year jump incoming for the Packers quarterback. Here's my thing. I think Jordan has so much potential ahead of him, which I think should be really scary, right? We saw a lot of ups and downs with his footwork last season. I think if he gets that consistent and cleaned up, he's a night and day different player when his footwork is clean. Obviously, it goes in tandem with his wide receivers and his pass catchers, you know, being healthy, staying on the field, running their right routes, etc. But just that relationship and that, again, consistency with his pass catchers, another jump right there. The deep ball. Remember when we used to talk about the deep ball with Jordan?
So often.
That's getting so there. So he's got all the traits, the arm talent, the arm angles. We saw it all. It's just getting it all together again and then doing it across 17 games. Easy, right? I do think that if there is any faltering, any stretch of quote unquote bad games or looks worse than he did last season, we're going to be hearing about it for days on end. That's okay. It's okay. Development is not linear. It's going to happen.
It's a good note for your personal life too, everyone.
Yes.
Growth is not always linear.
It is not always linear. And it also doesn't mean that he's not going to get back to where we know he can be. You know, he will. He is deserving of the contract. He has shown us all those things. So that is my caveat to it. However, he's in MVP conversations already for a reason. He's probably going to end up at least in the top 10, if not top 5 quarterbacks. And I say that with confidence.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's hard to say like poised for a bigger season, because you can't get a bigger season than being a quarterback that's taking over for a MVP, Hall of Fame, you know, franchise greatest to ever do it kind of player.
And making his own way.
Right. And I'm saying he did it admirably. Like he didn't have to lead the way that others wanted him to or expected him to. He kind of commanded the locker room with like this very calm poise, and we're seeing it pay dividends. You know, Matt LaFleur's talked about it. Brian Gutekunst talked about it. The players themselves have talked about it. Jordan talked about it, saying like the way that this roster is feeling right now, it's so tight knit, closer than they've been. They're a lot more comfortable and confident. Their relationships are improving because they've been around each other longer. And I think it's just, you know, this can segue into like the Jaden Reed and the other players that we're going to talk about on offense. But the second year jump is important for all of them. And I think there are big expectations now because we're talking about a team that happened to get to the divisional round, almost arguably should have, could have gone to the championship game with one of the youngest offenses to ever do it. So when you think about guys like Luke Musgrave injured, Tucker Kraft injured, Jaden Reed, you know, they're all players that you expect to take a huge jump. And the way that they were able to perform their rookie seasons, or, you know, their first season as a starter, with all of those expectations without being on the same page, like, now they've had an entire offseason and mandatory minicamp and, you know, training camp to get through together, and it's going to pay dividends.
Yeah. I think when you set the bar that high your first season in the league, you have to come back and produce. Mm-hmm. But they don't seem – it's just that – it's to your point, it's like it's this energy in that locker room that they don't even seem fazed by the expectations. Now, again, we'll see what happens when the season comes. Like, I'm tempering, but – they're kind of like, yeah, you know, like this is, they're very secure in who they are. They're like, this is exactly who we are. We know who we are. We're going to step on the field. We're going to show you who we are.
I think they were not.
Yeah. They're not all talk. They're like, yeah, uh-huh. You saw us. You're going to see us again. You know, even like you mentioned Luke Musgrave being, we know he was hurt. He had the lacerated kidney. Still one of the wildest injuries I've ever heard of. And he's itching to get back on the field. He's already back looking like he would, he never left. We talk about this like duality on this team. And I think the Packers have done such a nice job, like constructing this roster for all the players to really complement one another. And you see that again with the tight ends between him and Tucker Kraft. They have very complementary skill sets. They're not duplicative, right? They're not redundant. When Luke went down, Tucker immediately filled in and was able to be just like step up into this role. And we always talk about tight end. Oh, it's such a big learning curve. You know, don't expect too much out of your rookie tight ends. Like, hold up. And yet both of them had really, really lovely rookie seasons. Again, not breakout. They're not the next Travis Kelce yet. You know, but enough to say, okay, when they're on the field, like, our quarterback's going to get them the ball, or, you know, we trust them to make a big block. Now, not in the first half of the season, but towards the second half of the season, you saw that development and you saw those changes happen like in real time. I mean, you literally watched Tucker Kraft whiff on a Max Crosby block in the first half of the season and then make that same block again towards the end of the season. So yes, it's easy and to say going into this next season, well, I've already seen them develop in real time in game, like on my TV. So of course I feel confident that they're going to make that next jump in 2024, especially with, like you said, they're healthy. Tucker isn't, but he will be. They're back at every single practice, mandatory or not. They're developing that relationship with their quarterback, and they have all the traits. We haven't even gotten into the athleticism and the traits. I mean, we don't have to. We've done it on this show before. I think we can get into the wide receivers, but I think the tight ends, like, they get slept on a little bit because we get so excited about this wide receiving core, but both of them are going to be huge in this offense. Matt LaFleur loves his two tight end sets, and both of them being healthy, I think it's going to change like the whole nature of this offense.
Yeah. Because not only are they healthy, but they're taking that second year jump, having more comfort. You know, it was different when you had rookie Musgrave and rookie Kraft out there, like second week of the season. You're like, okay, what's gonna, like, oh, look, we're in 12 personnel, but why? Like, what's gonna be the outcome here? Now, you know, if Matt LaFleur is like in his bag in Brazil and he just trots out 12 personnel, we're all gonna be like really excited for it because they're two guys that you trust and they're taking that second year jump. So in that same vein, just want to touch on the wide receivers really quickly, because I think it's been a really hot discussion, especially the last couple weeks on Twitter for some reason. But the fact that the Packers don't necessarily have a wide receiver one, and we can argue that they do, we've talked about it, but that is the conversation, right? Who is it? Do they need one? Are they okay having a wide receiver room by committee? And you and I have both said on the show, we think Jaden Reed's going to have 1,000 yards this season. It's illegal to gamble in Wisconsin, but I would bet that he does, you know? So like a lot of that is why this offense is so successful, is because you don't have to have expectations of a wide receiver one. And every game, it was, you know, the Dontayvion Wicks game, the Jaden Reed game, the Romeo Doubs game. Hopefully we get a couple Christian Watson games. And that's not even talking about like Bo Melton game that, you know, could come, or the Malik Heath game. So what do you think about the wide receiver room in general? And I guess if you have, like, you know, we talked about Jaden Reed potentially going over 1,000, Christian Watson in that conversation, I'm sure. Doubs, I think, gets really close. So, like, expectations for the wide receivers who are all at different levels of breakout.
I hate this conversation, the wide receiver one. Like, can we stop? It's so tired. No, the Packers don't need a wide receiver one, okay? And if you need my thoughts on this, I think I've talked about it ad nauseum. Like, I just think, from more of like a bird's eye view, I think the NFL is evolving out of like the need for a wide receiver one. I know that they just paid Justin Jefferson, but like, he's kind of a one of one. And you're looking at all these teams, like, nobody wants to pay CD, you know, nobody wants to pay T. Higgins. Like, all these wide receivers are out here not getting paid because look at all the talent. Look at all of the talent. I just think it's a really interesting case study. Maybe we can do an episode on it. We're not going to get into it now at minute 41. back to the Packers. No, they do not need a wide receiver one. Look at what they were able to do last season. I mean, you already said it. Each game featured a different receiver. That's smart football. Each defense has its weakness. Each wide receiver has its strength. Lean into that. Exploit the defense however it fits best. With that being said, yeah, I am on the Jaden Reed is going to have 1,000 yards train. I will asterisk that, rushing and receiving, so like all-purpose yards, okay. Because last season he had like, I think, over a little over 800, and they were combined
912.
Not 912. I thought it was 812. Okay. Holy moly, Jaden. Talk about setting the bar.
93 just receiving.
Yeah, okay. That feels right. I mean, talk about setting the bar high your rookie season, man. No wonder he had offensive rookie of the year votes. But they used him. They used him in both receiving and rushing because he's just so versatile. And he was so pigeonholed when he came out as this like slot guy. And I think we saw last season, he's not really just a slot guy. They can move him all over the place. And I just think he's going to continue to build on that and build on what he's able to do. And clearly all he really needs to do is replicate last season, and he's basically there. So it's not really that big of a jump for him. And I think even if he does have and 1,000-yard season, he's still not wide receiver one. It's okay. It's okay. They have so much talent on that side, in that room. And each player is going to get their moment. They're going to get their touches. They're going to get their opportunities. They're going to get their touchdowns. This is going to be a very, very productive offense. This is not the Steelers, okay? They're going to get their touchdowns. Again, it's just they have a very creative play caller who gets their – Matt gets those guys the ball for the most part, not always, when it's right and when he feels like they're going to, you know, be as – I already said it, but like exploitive of the defense as possible. And they get their chunk plays, they get their explosive plays, but they're also able to get those, you know, 10, 12 play drives down the field. And now he has a signal caller who can also change things on the line. I just think these guys are just going to be, they're going to be even better than last season because coach and quarterback are also going to be able to put them in better positions too.
Well said. All right, we are running long for this, but let's talk about the O-line really quickly and then shift to everyone's favorite special teams. But I think the big one here that we wanted to talk about, obviously, Rashid Walker, there's questions about where he'll play on the line if he, you know, going into that, going into the season. But Zach Tom, I think, is the big one here because we talked about it a couple weeks ago when we talked about, you know, roster position battles. and he can play just about anywhere. You know, they're yeah. the Packers, you know, supposedly think he's an all pro caliber center, think he's a Pro Bowl caliber tackle. We've seen that he also has the ability to play guard, not really playing anywhere right now because of injuries in minicamp. We'll see if that changes. But what do you think? I mean, I think there's big expectations for him regardless of where he plays, because he has set such a precedent his first 2 years in the league that the expectations are just that wherever they move him, he's going to have like the Elgton Jenkins effect and he'll just lock it down.
The Elgton Jenkins effect. I love yeah. that. I'm going to let you take this one because I know this is your man, but I think we've had a lot of conversations today about guys taking that next jump. I really think like the next jump for Zach Tom is Pro Bowl, all pro. Like there's not really anywhere else for him to go other than like genuine all league recognition for just how good of an offensive lineman he is. I think it'll depend on where the Packers ultimately end up keeping him at the line this season, whether they keep him at right tackle or they move him. But I think either way, he's going to end up making that jump into that like next echelon of offensive linemen.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's where these mini camps and training camp, it's going to get super interesting because we're still trying to see where we think he's going to play, where the Packers will play him, where they're interested in putting him. You know, he played so well at right tackle, was like a brick wall during the playoffs towards the end of the season, you know, going into the postseason, that there's not a, you know, maybe the Packers don't feel like moving him because they've seen the way that he holds up against edge rushers, or maybe they see that and they think, hey, we need him inside because we want him to, you know, hold up against defensive tackles and nose tackles, and, you know, maybe his skills are better used there. So just a really interesting kind of case study that I don't think we're going to know the answer to until the very beginning of the season, week one, when he trots out there. Preseason's not going to tell us much because I don't think he's going to play much in the preseason because he doesn't need to. So we'll just have to see kind of like where he fits. But yeah, super interesting. I think that there's big expectations for him, but I also think that he can match that. And I think he's okay with that. And I think that wherever he plays, he's going to be successful. So it's really about where the Packers trust that he fits.
100%. I mean, again, good things only in this conversation about Zach Tom is like, what do you do with a player who's going to be successful at multiple positions? That's just good problems. It's almost like catch 22. Do we screw ourselves by moving him out of that position into this other one, or do we screw ourselves by not moving him into another position that he could be even more successful at? I guess we'll find out.
All right, so let's shift it then to the last position that we're here to talk about. Your face says it all for those that are only listening to the audio. It's Anders Carlson, right? We have to mention him. We talked about it last week. We expect him to win the job. Kicking in the NFL looks a little bit different this season with the new kickoff rules. But by all accounts, if you look at his rookie numbers, everybody remembers your last couple kicks. And unfortunately, his came in the playoffs. And unfortunately, he didn't make all of his last couple kicks. So that's what people are going to remember about the season. Started really hot, wavered. Packers lost some confidence in him. Packers fans lost some confidence in him. Now there's a kicker competition. You've got Greg Joseph, who's been around the league quite a bit. They brought in a rookie. So, I mean, what do you think? We think it's his job, but I think the expectations are much higher going into your second year. Now you've shaken out the rookie pains, and if you win the job, the bar is high.
Yeah. I mean,
figuratively and literally, the crossbars are high.
Oh my God, so many puns in this show. The thing with kickers, and it's sad, but it's true, is we're talking about like, oh, tight ends, they have this like big learning curve, like da da da. Kickers have the shortest leash ever. I mean, truly the shortest. Like, Anders is already on the hot seat and it's his second season in the league. I mean, how many other players have that short of a leash? Other than kickers, I don't think anybody. See, they already brought in competition for him. It's his second season. So yeah, I mean, I feel confident that he's going to end up beating out Greg Joseph and Jack Poleski, if that's even how you pronounce his name.
It's not, but that's okay. It's okay. Just keep
like, fine. Yeah, there we go. Okay, guys, third string kickers, like, give me a break. Podlesny. That's it. Okay. But that's also like the that's a low bar. That's a low bar, right? He still needs to perform at a much higher level this season, because bare minimum here is you're making your extra points.
Yep.
You're making your short field goals, and you're hopefully making as many of the longer field goals as you can. He was not doing one and two as consistently as an NFL kicker should be. And those are grounds for firing, unfortunately, in this league. He needs to take that jump. He just needs to. I think the Packers coaching staff believes in him. I think Rich Bisaccia believes in him. I'd like the fan base to believe in him, but yeah, you got to see it. Because if he trots out there like the first month of the season and he's missing extra points again, they're bringing somebody up immediately.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think, you know, you said it really well. Their leashes are the shortest, and a lot of that is because so much rides on their shoulders, and obviously so do quarterbacks. Every position has its own challenges and expectations, but kickers are on the field for a very limited amount of time. And when they're out there, the expectation is that you're scoring points. And yep. He was 100% inside 40 yards. And then when you looked at 40 plus, he was 7 of 13 from 40 plus. So just things you expect to improve, because he's got the leg. We've seen it. You know, we've seen the success of the leg. And I think his brother, not to keep going back to Daniel, is a really good example of this, just because Rich Bisaccia knew him. I was at the game where he and Mason Crosby just traded missed field goals for the Packers-Vikings. Game ended in a tie. He gets cut, then goes to become one of the better kickers in the league with the Raiders. So it does take time. You know, it's likely that if the Packers were like, hey, we're moving on from this guy, he would go kick somewhere else and, you know, have a nice career there. But just something that you need to see. He's probably got the hottest seat, unfortunately for him, going into the early part of the season. So,
yeah.
Perry, any final thoughts before we wrap this one up at almost an hour?
Oh my God.
But isn't that crazy? Isn't that kind of cool to think that we spent 53 minutes talking about Packers we think are going to have a big season? Like, the expectation for this team, I think, just can't be understated. Like, when you have the season that you had in 2023 with such a young core, and you make the playoffs and you have a deep push, like we talked about, where you could have theoretically gone further, and to be excited. And we aren't talking about like, oh, they lost all these huge names. Oh, there's so much turnover. What are the Packers going to do? They lost like their star this and they're better that. No. If anything, the Packers roster got better on paper, and I'm excited. That's all. That's how I'm going to end it. I'm excited.
There you go. You wrapped it up, girl. There's as good as 2023 was, and how excited everyone is feeling. Like, I hope we showed how much better they can be. There is so much more development to be had from these really young, really talented players who have already shown what they can do on the field. Like, if the coaches and the players themselves can like pull out even more potential, it's just, this team is going to elevate even higher. It's very exciting.
Yeah. What a way to end it. Let's wrap it there. Thank you as always for listening to the Packs What She Said podcast. You can find us anywhere you find your favorite audio formats of the podcast, Spotify, Apple, all that good stuff. You can find us on the Cheesehead TV website, because we are back with Cheesehead TV. So excited for that return. And of course, you can find us on YouTube at Packs What She Said. Please like and subscribe if you don't already follow the show. We really appreciate it. It helps us out every time you give us a thumbs up. So thank you, thank you, thank you. As always, we will be back next week. We don't know what the topic will be yet, but you'll find out when we do. So thank you for listening, and go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.